It's good to see everybody out this morning. It's kind of been one of those days with all the wind. I got here to church this morning. I looked over and I had my lesson, but I didn't have my Bible with me. I went into a little bit of a panic, but luckily my wife was late to church, but she ended up and went back and got it for me. So hopefully, for some reason, I just don't preach well without that Bible. So we'll see how it goes. But anyway, it's good to see everyone out this morning. I hope the things that I have to say this morning is in accordance with God's word, and what I have to say will hopefully be uplifting to you, and that we can go away from here today and say that we've been edified for being here and be better in the weeks to come or in the days to come. This morning we're going to take our text from 2 Samuel chapter 24 verses 17 through 25, and this is the story of David when he numbers the people. And David takes a census across the land, and he tells Joab, his captain, to number the people. And for 9 months, they number them, and they come back with a number of 1.2 million men who draw the sword for Israel and for God's army. But as that goes on, as soon as the people are numbered, David, his conscience hits him because he realizes that he has broken God's law. And God comes to him. He did not want his people numbered. But he comes to him and he tells him, you have a choice. You have three choices. You can have 7 years of famine, or you can have 3 months fleeing before your enemies, or you can have 3 days of pestilence from the Lord. And David put his and the people's fate in the hand of God, and he chose the three-day plague because it was the shortest amount of time for his people. And that's where our story picks up, or where our reading picks up. David entreats the Lord for mercy on the behalf of Israel. He tells him, he says, I understand why this is going on, but the reason this is going on is because of my sin, not because of the people. And he says, please take it out on me, or take it out on my family, but can you please stop the plague from your children? And of course, God hears the prayer of David, and he stalls there in what is called Gad. And he stops there, and the angel of death is waiting. And David gets a message from Gad the prophet, and he tells him, he says, if you'll go to the threshing floor of Araunah's and build me an altar there, I will stay the plague, and I want you to sacrifice to me. So David does that. And he goes to Araunah, and he meets Araunah as he comes, and obviously, with all the circumstance of the king showing up on your place, Araunah was very glad to receive him. And David tells him, he says, Araunah, I need to buy your threshing floor because God has told me I need to build an altar and I need to make sacrifice. So he does that, and Araunah, as any good subject does, the Bible says he told him, he said, well, it is yours. Just from like one king to another, he says, this land or this threshing floor and these oxen and the things for the threshing floor, the wood, he said, it's all yours. Take it and make your sacrifice. But that was not good enough for David. He didn't want that because he made the statement to Araunah. He says, nay, I won't take it from you. He said, I will purchase it from you because I will not worship God, but that it does not cost me something. And you know, that's as you look at David. David had a very colorful life, and David had lots of things happen in his life. I identify a lot with David because we see his imperfections, and I see my imperfections as a human, and he's very relatable to me. But one thing about David was he understood sacrificing for God. He understood that his heart meant something because the Bible said he was a man after God's own heart. But he understood that when he was going to worship God, it not only was the sacrifice he was giving, or that he was sacrificing the animal, but also himself was sacrificing also. And that's what he said. He said, I'm not going to worship God free of charge. He says, it's going to cost me something. And you know, that's very evident in David's life. As he goes on, as he carries on his kingship there of Israel, of the children of Israel, we know that he is hoping and praying that he is going to get to build the permanent altar or the permanent temple of God. And he sets aside that, and we can read that in the Old Testament, where when it's at the end of his reign and God tells him, he says, David, because you're a man of war, I'm not going to let you build the temple. He said, but your son is going to. And he turns to his son in those days and he says, Solomon, he said, his gold and silver, he says, I have heaped it up. He says, I have heaps and heaps of gold and silver for God's temple. And he said, of iron and of brass and all the other things, he said, I don't even know how much I have, but you've got more than enough. But he said, I put it up for the kingdom of God. See, David understood that when it comes to God, it was about God and not just about David. He had sacrificed many things for God. He had put back many things for God that he was willing to give to him. And you know, as I read that story, that is very compelling to me. Just the statement David made there in Samuel 24 and 17. He said, I'm not going to worship God, but what it cost me something. And that's what I want to ask you this morning. Is following God and being a Christian, what's it worth to you? And that's the title of the lesson this morning. What's it worth to us? And I ask that question, and I ask you to keep that in your mind as we go through the study this morning. What is what we have right here worth to you in your life? The family we have, the love we have, the forgiveness we have, what is it worth? Because you know what? We're losing that in today's society. We live in a very, and I don't guess it's anything new from the beginning of time, but we live in a very selfish society. Even in the religious world, it's very selfish. If you look around, what do we see in other denominations and even in our own denomination sometimes? We're turning towards the idea that we need to please the masses. We need to please the people. We need to make them happy. They need to feel lifted up. And I'm not saying edified. Notice I didn't say edified because we are required to edify. But we're not here for our entertainment. We are here to worship God. And the religious world, I believe, is losing that because of the selfishness of mankind and the selfishness that is inherent in us. We're beginning to see churches turn into more of a concert or more of an entertainment venue than a place to worship God. And see, what happens there is we are no longer sacrificing for God, but we're causing God to sacrifice for us. And brothers and sisters, we know that He's already done that. He's already put His Son on a cross 2,000 years ago for you and I. He sacrificed for us. And now it's our turn. And I just want to ask you this morning, what's it worth? Only you can answer that question. Only I can answer that question myself, but what's it worth? You know, we have so many people that they're out. It's like the statement that I believe John F. Kennedy made. He said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." And you know, so many people are taking that around today. What can my country do for me, or what can my church do for me, instead of what can I do for God and my church or for my country? And that's the idea that we as humans have to fight against. So in the question, what is it worth to us? The first thing I thought of in putting these points together was Christianity is worth our sacrifice and sacrifice to our self-sacrifice and putting others first in our life. Romans chapter 1, verses 28 through 32, if you'll turn over there with me. Romans chapter 1. Verses 28 through 32. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envyings, murders, debates, deceits, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. You know, that is the true state of humankind. That's where, left unchecked, left without a higher moral authority for us as mankind to follow, that's what we debase back to as a human when we try to do things on our own. We become backbiters, we become haters of God, and all the disobedient things that were listed there. That is the natural state of man without God. And I mean, we can see that in our world today. We don't have to look very far to see that. The depravity that is on our social media, the depravity that is in our governments and in country, in the population in general. Selfishness. But you know, God calls us to a separate, to a higher purpose, if you will, in our lives. Not to put ourselves first, but to put others first. To put Him first and to love. And you know what? Love is a sacrifice, whether we know it or not. Because you know what? When we love someone, what do? We open ourselves up to hurt, to pain, to actually having to do something for someone because we love them. See, it's a sacrifice. And it's not a bad sacrifice, but it's a good thing. But it takes us doing something. It takes a sacrifice on our part because it's love. And we have to risk the things that are associated with that. And sometimes that's heartache, but most of the time, it's a rewarding aspect if we'll just do it. It's like with many things that God says. You know, when we do it mankind's way, it's always backwards. We think it's forwards, but it's backwards. But when we do it God's way, it always works out. It's always the best for us, but it's so hard, a lesson for us to learn sometimes. Well, Mark chapter 12 and verse 33. Mark chapter 12 and verse 33, and to love him with all thy heart and with all the understanding and with all the soul and with all the strength and love his neighbor as himself is more than whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. You know, right there, Jesus was asked, in the previous verses, he says, this Pharisee says, what is the greatest commandment? And Jesus said, fear God and to love God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, and also your neighbor. You know, right up there, and he said, on that hangs all the law and the prophets. And you know, we've said many times the Bible is a book of relationships, but it's a book of relationships and love towards one another. You know, and it's very easy for me to love my children. It's very easy for me to love my family. But you know, when it gets past that, how willing am I to love others? To love the problems that other people have, to love those people who have problems. And I say to you this morning, it's very important that we make that decision and to say that we are going to love and that we are going to, with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our mind, not only God, but our fellow man. And that means the people outside this room too. Not just the ones that we share a kinship with as being members of Christ, but every human in this world is worth our love and the respect that God has told us that all humankind deserves. The kind that Jesus showed in his ministry here on this earth. We need to love with all our heart, with our soul and our mind. That's not just a little bit, that's everything. You know, we're very blessed here at this congregation. And I don't want anybody to take from this lesson to think that I'm beating on the congregation saying we need more love. I think we can always use more love, but I think that's part of the reason this congregation is so strong is the love that it has for one another. But we can always have more. But loving one another creates a special bond. When we spend time with one another and we love one another, what does that allow us to do? That allows us to have the mind of Christ. That allows us to look at our brother and sister, sometimes that are maybe taken in a fault, and we look at them and we go, I love you. What you did may not have been right, but I'm here to help you. And I'm here to help you get back with God. And that's the kind of people that we need to be. That's loving with our heart, with our soul, and our mind. You know, just to say, well, I love you, but, you know, now I'm going to beat you down with the scriptures because, you know, for some reason I feel like you need to be punished by me. That's not loving our brother. Loving is forgiveness. Loving is helping. Loving is spending time to help those that are in trouble. It's time to help those that need us to get off our couch, to get out of our chair, to turn the TV off, to sacrifice our time and our love for other people. That's loving with our heart and our soul and our mind, with every part of our being loving. What do you think the state of this world would be if we all treated each other with love and respect as God tells us to be? It'd be a lot better place, wouldn't it? There'd be less wars, there'd be less hatred, there'd be less division. And that's what God is preaching, and that's what God is wanting from you and I, is love. And that's something that I guess when I talk about The whole point of every person, no matter what they've done, is deserving of human decency and human dignity that God has ascribed to all of us. I had a problem with that. But that's something that I've really thought about. And no matter, you know, not that we condone the actions, but we have to love the person and separate the person from the sin. And not only in those, we have to do that for each other. Not on those that outside in the world, but for each other. How else are we going to grow? How else are we going to heal when we're in the church if we don't have that love and that forgiveness for one another? And we get that love by spending time together. We get that time by associating with each other and getting to know each other. Because it's hard to love somebody you don't know, isn't it? But when we love somebody and we spent time with somebody and we see those flaws, it's a lot of times it's a lot easier for us to overlook those, isn't it? Love with all our hearts, our souls, and our minds. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 2. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 2. And walk in love as Christ also hath loved us and given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet smelling savor. Walk in love as Christ walked in love. You know, that's a very short sentence and a very short statement to encompass a very large lifetime, a very large footprint of love that Jesus left behind. And you know, I what always seems here lately has really been stuck with my mind is the woman at the well. We've spent some time studying that personally and just reading over that. And you know, there are so many glaring problems in the woman at the well's life. And I'm not really going to go into all of that because that's not part of it. That's a lesson in and of itself. But the fact is, she had problems. And the Son of Man, not only was he dealing with somebody or talking to someone that all the people around him would have questioned because she was a Samaritan, but how did he treat that woman? She was bad. She had a lot of skeletons in the closet. You know, I dare say it's somebody that you and I really probably wouldn't want to be around. But the Son of God looked at her and he said, "I've got something that if you knew what it was, you'd ask for it." Talking about the water of life, and she said, "I do want that." And see, the difference was, Jesus can see in the heart. You and I can't. But the fact is, we have to love. And he didn't tell this woman how evil she was. Did he call her sin out? He did. He said, "You've had five husbands, and the one that you're with now isn't your husband, right?" But he didn't call her all the names in the book. He didn't say, "Ooh, get away from me. I can't handle you." He said, "I've got something that'll help your life." And she was a major proponent for the gospel when Jesus got through with her. She went back into the town. She said, "You've got to come see a guy. He said he's told me everything that I've ever done." Are we willing to walk in love as Christ did? That's a sacrifice, brothers and sisters. That means we put ourselves out there. That means that we help other people and that we're willing to help those that have problems. Emily says it a lot because it's a saying that's very close to her. She says, "A church is not a place for well people. Church is for all of us because we're sick. And we need to be here because if we wait till the time and say, well, you know, I'll come there when I get my life figured out or when I'm healed, you're missing the point because we're all sick. We all got a terminal disease called sin and death. And we need Jesus. And so do other people. We got a world full of people that are hurting. Christ lived in a world where people were hurting, and his example was love. And our example that we need to follow is love and love others. We need to love each other and build this congregation up, and we need to love others. Because what is one of the greatest tools that you can have to build a relationship with somebody? A sense of love or a sense of caring for another person. That was the example that was set before us. That's why the Bible said, or that's why we read, he said, what's the greatest commandment? He said, love the Lord thy God and to love your neighbor. You can't bring somebody to church that you don't love or that doesn't feel love for you or that doesn't have a respecting relationship with, do they? We've got to be like Christ in love no matter what. You know, he was willing to serve, and he was willing to do what it took to bring people under his loving care and his salvation, so much so that he died on the cross. So it's not really much of a sacrifice, is it, when we look in comparison to Christ, to the sacrifice of loving our neighbor and loving our congregation? Philippians chapter 2 in verse 3. Philippians chapter 2 in verse 3, it says, Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than themselves. You know, that I look at that, and I think a lot of times we say, well, we need to look at somebody and just think of I'm nothing and they're better. And I don't think that I don't really think the meaning of that is that, is what my thought has always been. I think what it means is see your brethren and see other people that they are worthy of the same esteem that you expect for yourself. You know, when we think about my life, I expect certain things, don't I? A lot of times we demand things of God. I need this. I want this. I need this. But you know, I think we should esteem others worthy of the same things that we do. And when we do that, when we put others first, that's how we build a strong church. That's how we build strong relationships. Nobody in this room, I would think, unless, I don't know, maybe that's your personal issue, I don't know, but goes out to seek a friendship with somebody who is not loving or not kind or not helpful in any way. We all want friendships of love and kindness. That's a human need. We need love, don't we? We need people to sacrifice their times to help us out. I don't care who you are. I don't care if we've been in the church 50 years or we've been in the church 2 days. We all need help at some point. We all need love. Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 10. Romans 12, verses 9 through 10. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. And be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. We need to love each other, we need to prefer each other, and we need to build each other up. This congregation is strong. I'm not saying that. But we could always be stronger. And our love is great, but our love could always be stronger. We're a great example, I think, of love and caring and help. We've seen great examples of compassion and care poured out. In my life, I've seen it. I've seen it in others. One thing that really comes to my mind, it was the day that my dad passed away, and I hadn't called anybody. It was just me, us and our family. But you know how things spread. But I was standing there, and my father passed away, and I was very upset. And I walked outside to head to the waiting room to try to see where the kids were. And there stood, I believe, Gerald Bedwell and Craig Setliff. And Craig didn't say anything to me. He just hugged me. And I sat there and I wept on his shoulder. You know, he took time out of his day. He took time out of his life to show me and drive to Lubbock and show me love, to support me when was a dark day in my life. That's preferring one another. That's helping one another. That's loving one another. And we all have our stories. Probably everybody in here's got some story somehow of how somebody in their time of need swooped in and saved the day. Because those people were following the example of Christ and they were loving their neighbor. They were preferring one another. They were sacrificing for others. And it's worth it. It's very much worth it. The next thing that I want to look at is Christianity is worth our heart, our service, and our gratitude. Matthew chapter 12, verses 34 and 35. Matthew chapter 12, verses 34 through 35. O ye generation of vipers, how shall ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, but an evil man out of an evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. You know, Jesus right there says that wherever your heart is at, that's what's going to come out of your mouth. And that's what he's saying to the Pharisees. He says, you are a generation of vipers. How are you, being so evil in your actions, how are you going to speak things that are good? He says, out of a good heart comes good things. Out of a bad heart comes bad things. So I ask you this morning, what are you putting in your heart? See, our heart in Scripture is our conscience, is our thoughts, is our internal being. What are we putting in our hearts? See, we're all born with a hole in our heart. We're born with a hole that we have to fill, and there's one of two ways we can fill that. We can fill that with God, or we can fill that with the world and Satan. But one way we're going to fill that hole, and I ask you this morning, what are you putting in your heart? Are we guarding our hearts? Or are we just leaving them out there for everything and anything to stick to it? See, out of a good heart comes good things. And out of an evil heart comes evil things. It's just pretty simple. So what are we putting in our heart? What are we putting in our children's hearts? Are we putting in a love for the brethren? Are we putting in a love for God? Are we putting in the Scriptures that tell us how to be better people? Or are we filling it with the adultery, the killing, the lying, the stealing, the cursing, that everything that we see on TV, that we see on Facebook, that we see on all the other social media things, is that what we're putting in our heart? We need to be putting God in our heart. You know, that's something that's very important. Our heart is a lot of times the thing that keeps us centered when we fill it with godly things. But the heart can be deceitful, right? You know, we hear this saying a lot in our lives, well, just follow your heart, it'll never lead you astray. The Bible's full of people that followed their heart. The world is full of people that followed their heart and went astray. So we have to be careful. Matthew chapter 15, verses 8 through 9, and this is not a category in which we want to fall, so we have to guard our heart and compare it to the Scriptures daily, because in verses 8 through 9 of chapter 15, it says, this people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. You know, a lot of times that's what following our heart gets us into. We start being prideful. We start lifting ourselves up in the way that we want to be. And we start trying to bend God's will to what we want. And then the next thing you know, we're standing here and we've deceived our hearts. We've deceived ourselves. And just like the Pharisees, we start honoring Him with our lips, but our heart is far from Him. You know, that's a very serious thing. Jesus never lifted Himself up, did He? He never looked for praise. He never looked for glory. All He wanted to do was God's will and to save mankind. And that's something that we have to really be careful with, because our heart, it can be very lifted up with pride. And we have to make sure that we don't end up in the service of our lips are serving God, but our heart is far from Him. See, that was the difference between, well, one of the big differences between the old and the new law. You went through the motions a lot of times under the old law. You had to do this and that and sacrifice this and do it a certain way and at certain times of the year and a certain person and all these rituals that had to be done according to a step. And there was heart involved, I'm not saying that, but it was more of an outward service of this and this and this. And you know what? He said, I want your heart to serve me. He said, we're no longer going to do it the old way, but He said, I'm going to write my laws in their hearts and in their minds. Our heart needs to be a fertile ground for God's word, not for the things of this world. And all those combined, all these things combined is what we have to do in order to serve God and for it to be worth it. Next I want to look at is not only heart, but our service to God and service to others. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. It says, Paul, the servant of Jesus Christ. Nope, that's not it. Romans chapter 12, verse 1. Had it backwards. Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. I beseech ye therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. You know, again, I go back to this religious mindset of the day. He says right there, he says, present yourself a living sacrifice to God, which is your reasonable service. In what we do in our life, is that a sacrifice to God? What are we sacrificing to God? Because it's worth something. We've established that, I think, this morning, that it is worth something. Are we willing to pass up the dollar to serve God? Are we willing for it to cost us prestige, power, and money to serve God? To be a living sacrifice? Things we do and places we go, are we willing to sacrifice those for God? The time that we spend, is it spent for God or is it spent for us? And I'm going to tell you, brothers and sisters, as going through this, some of these questions, I'm not standing here throwing them at you, I'm throwing them at myself. And I hate to say, a lot of it's sticking on me. Present ourselves a living sacrifice. The things we do, our body, our heart, our soul, our mind, that's what God wants from us. He doesn't want a robot. If he wanted robots, he could have created us and said, you do not have free will, and you get up every day and you sing praises for this amount of time and you do sacrifices for this amount of time and everything's great. But God did not create us that way. He created us with free will. Why? Because he put in, we're just like him. We want love. That's why we seek out relationships. That's why we seek out companions. That's why we love our children. We want love. God is the same. He wants our love. And he wants us to serve him. And you know what? He didn't put a grievous burden on us. But don't we act a lot of times like it's such a hard thing to do, to serve God? We have to present ourselves and our bodies a living sacrifice to God because it's worth it. It's worth the love of Christ. It's worth the love of being able to go to our Father in prayer and him hear us. All the other things in the world, it's not worth it. If you gain the whole world and lose your soul, it's not worth it. But a Christian life is. Service. It's what he wants from us. He says our bodies are living. It's our reasonable service to him. Galatians chapter 6, verses 3 through 1, it talks about bearing one another's burdens. He wants us to serve each other. Christ sat in the house where his disciples or where his apostles were, and he washed their feet. The Son of God that lived in heaven, he came down to this earth, he lived a humble life, and he sat down and he washed 12 men's filthy, dirty feet, the Son of God. And Peter said, man, I don't want you to do that to me, Lord. He said, I'm going to wash your feet. And he said, you got to understand, I'm here to serve. And I'm teaching you that you're here to serve. We're here to serve one another. And this congregation, again, is very good. But we can always be better. I can be better. We all know personally we can be better. We're here to bear one another's burdens. He said, when a brother is taken in a fault, same in that verse is talking about it, when a brother is taken in a fault, ye that are holy, restore them. Yeah, bearing one another's burdens is not just when somebody passes away, not when somebody has surgery. It's the nitty-gritty of dealing and helping people when they become entangled with sin, and still loving them and helping them bear that burden. It's more than just the emotional things. It's the spiritual things that we have to bear one another's burdens. And is it worth it? When you see your brother restored or your sister restored, yeah, it's worth it. When you know the angels are rejoicing in heaven, it's worth it. We've all seen many things, and that happened in many ways, of people being restored and their burdens being born in this congregation. And we all know it's worth it. but we have to be willing to do it. And what about gratitude? You know, I think all this sets together, and if you visit with Mark Thiel much, he'll say, you know, if you want to get things life in your right start things right in your life, start with gratitude. Have you ever tried to name all the blessings? I mean, start off with everything that you have in your life that God has blessed you with, from the air you breathe to the shoes on your feet to the clothes on your back to the food. You know, and we could stand up here till all the roasts at home are burning, and I could just tell you thing after thing if we sat down. But we ought to try it sometime. Sit down and make a list, or in your mind, or talk about all of the things that God has done for you. And you go back and you look in the hard times, in the deep times, in the things where you were wondering what was going to happen, and you wondering if the light at the end of the tunnel was a train or if you was really going to get out of it. And you'll know that even in those times, God was there to bless. I know from the experiences in my own life, when I thought, man, everything is falling apart, when I look back on it, you can see God trying to teach you a lesson. You can see the hand of God working in your life, because everything works together for those that serve Him. He said, if you'll put me first, all the other things, all the worldly things will fall into place. We've got to have gratitude, people. The Son of God was nailed to a cross and shed His blood on Calvary for you and I. That's worth just a little bit of our gratitude, isn't it? No, it's worth a lot of our gratitude for what He did. Rejoice and hope in the Lord. Romans chapter 5 and verse 1. Romans chapter 5. Therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. Peace. Justified. That's what we have when we're with Christ. That's what we have when we have gratitude and we put His word into our minds and into our service. What more could we ask for in this life? If we lived in a tent and we wondered where our next meal was coming from, but our soul is saved and we can pray to God, can we be content? You bet. We have brothers and sisters all over this world that get up every morning and they rejoice. Not because of their physical blessings necessarily, but because of their spiritual blessings. Because they don't have to go and worship some idol somewhere. They know the truth. We need to be grateful for everything that we have. And if we're not, what's that make us? Selfish? A little bit bratty is what me and Emily like to use. How can we not be grateful for what's been done for us when we truly, truly think about it? And when you take gratitude and you put that in your heart and you turn your heart to God and you turn your heart to Jesus and your service to God, guess what? One feeds upon the other. The heart feeds the service feeds the gratitude feeds the heart, and it goes on and it's on and it's on, and it's a self-sustaining thing that we just have to add the scriptures every little bit to keep that going, and it keeps going. We become a lot better person. We have to have gratitude, service, and a heart to serve God and one another. What about gratitude for this church? You know, it's really easy for me to sit here and go, well, oh, so-and-so over there did this to me, or you sit up here and say, well, Callan did this to me so many years ago. I mean, we all are human. We all have issues. There's a lot of times we all have things that we think, well, you know, maybe I'd like to see you do different in your life. But in the end, we need love for each other. Are we grateful for each other? Boy, I am. I am. Because I know that if things fell apart in my life and things were totally in a wreck, that all I'd have to do is pick up the phone and say, I need this. And my house would be full of people wanting to help. And you know the same, that if you were needing something, all you got to do is pick up the phone, and your house will be full of brothers and sisters there to help you, to love you, to do whatever. Are we grateful for that? We better be. because there's a lot of people that would kill to have the kind of congregation that we have, the kind of love that we have, and we need to be grateful for it. We don't need to tear each other down, and we don't. We've come a long ways in our history, I believe. We've grown a lot as a congregation. But we need to be grateful for each other. The last thing I want to ask or say in my points is, in our Christian life and following God, it is worth our obedience. Again, in Mark chapter 12, verses 30, it says, "Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart." That's what it boils down to. We need to love God, and we need to love each other. But first of all, love God. "Seek him first, as I said before, and all these things will be added unto you," he said. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13. I use it a lot, I know. And I know y'all think a lot of times, you know, well, he's using that again. But it's just such a good verse to me because it hits me between the eyes every time, and I need it. But it's Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 3. Nope, 13. "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." We get caught up in our lives and we say, well, you know, Callan's this important person, and what am I supposed to do? Well, I need to provide for my family. And all those things are true, but God didn't put me here to be rich. He didn't put me here to be famous. He didn't put me here to be somebody special. He put me here on this earth to be his servant, his child, and someone who loves him, and to fear him in respect, and to keep his commandments. Kind of takes away the grandiose idea that we all get told, oh, when you graduate high school, oh, you're going to be something, you're going to make something, you're going to be great in this world. What they need to be telling us, follow God, keep his commandments, do what he has to say, and you'll be a great person. That's what we need to be, right? Who cares about if you got $1 million? Who cares about if you got $1,000 or what you drive or what clothes are on your back? What are you doing for God? Are you a Christian? Do you fear God and keep his commandments? And like I've said before, we spend millions, if not billions of dollars in this country on self-help tapes, self-help books, self-help gurus, self-help, all these things. What do I do? What do I do? How do I be a better person? And for probably about $5 at Walmart, you can buy this book right here and you can turn over. You want to find what the meaning of life is? Fear God and keep his commandments. That's your whole duty. Everything else is side note. Everything else is a side note. See, you're put here to be a servant of his, not a servant of self. So I say to you this morning, Matthew chapter 16 and verse 24, God says to deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. That's what Christ says. Deny ourselves, pick up our cross, and follow him. Are we willing to do that? Is it worth it to you this morning to do that? Only you can answer that question, but I have to answer it with a resounding, yes, it's worth it. Sometimes it costs a little. Sometimes it hurts a little bit. But not near like a cross. Not near like a scourging. Let's remember that as the days come in the next week, and let's hopefully be better, be grateful, have a good heart, and serve others. That's all I have to say this morning. I hope the things that I have said have been interesting, have been thought-provoking in some way, and will help you be better. I know it's helped me. I've enjoyed the study. If there's somebody here that is not a member of the church, don't wait. We're not guaranteed tomorrow. We're not guaranteed that I'm going to make it back to my pew before something happens to me or to you. Don't delay. We got water in the back. We got clothes in the back. You don't even have to get your clothes wet. But don't put that off. If there's somebody here that feels they have started the walk with God, they've somehow strayed away, somehow they want to be better, or if there's just a need in your life, maybe you're down, maybe you're in a time of trouble, and you just need prayers, that's okay too. If there's one of either class, we ask you to come as we stand and sing the song of invitation.